Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bo?
Bo is present.
Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Druskowski? Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier? Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott? Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, present.
Representative Druskowski? Representative Frazier? Representative Scott? Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. First up on the agenda, we have the approval of the minutes from March 2nd. Representative Moeller, have you had an opportunity to review those minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and I would move those minutes.
Thank you. All in favor of the Representative Moeller motion, please unmute and say aye.
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 Any opposed? The minutes are approved. First up on the agenda, we have a presentation from the Minnesota State High School League. We have Eric Martins, the executive director. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Eric Martins, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota State High School League, representing approximately 500 member schools in the state of Minnesota. The recent events that have taken place within schools indicate that there are issues with racist comments and actions, as well as general respect for one another. A number of these incidents have happened within athletic teams or are connected to athletic contests. These events clearly indicate that there is more work to do. It is critical that our schools, our programs, and our events be safe, welcoming, and inclusive. Every student should have a place in our schools and in our activities, and their involvement should be free from behaviors that are intended to harm, marginalize, insult, or offend. There's no place in our schools or in our programs and contests for racial harm to take place through taunts, threats, or any other behaviors. In working toward this important goal, Minnesota State High School League has taken several steps, including working directly with schools that have been impacted by these events and assisting them in addressing these incidents and the behaviors that have occurred. The League has facilitated communication between and among schools to bring them together in working to both address the behaviors that have taken place, as well as to provide support for those who have been impacted or victimized. We as a League have also banded together with a number of educational leadership organizations, including our Superintendents Association, AMSD, the Principals and Activities Directors Associations, and the school boards. You should all have a copy of our recent memorandum out to member schools that includes all of the organizations that are part of this work. Together, we are working collaboratively in improving behavior at high school events as well as in schools in general. This includes educating school leaders, providing resources that both inform and shape behavior, and also providing policies that address consequences or penalties for any prohibited behaviors. Together, we will organize groups of students who will develop a model code of conduct for all schools. The value of student voice is incredibly powerful in reaching classmates, staff, and community members in this endeavor. Through regional student meetings, we will both listen to the students and provide instruction in appropriate actions in safe schools. Furthermore, the League, the Principals Association, and the Activity Directors Association is partnering with Forbes Solution in convening a student conference focused on safe and welcoming schools and programs supported by strong student leadership. We know that our schools need to be prepared for these situations and that this requires strong systems and effective protocols to address any behaviors. It begins by teaching, promoting, and holding our students and staff to positive and appropriate behaviors, and also informing them of the actions that are to be taken when negative behaviors take place. specifically within our school activity programs. These expectations must be taught, modeled, and enforced. Similar to other situations that may take place in school, being prepared is the first step. Following that, it's critical that if a situation does occur, the appropriate actions be taken. And finally, that the school leaders follow through effectively after the event. This follow-through includes both addressing racist behaviors and supporting those who were subject to racial harm. Providing support is every bit as important for those students and others who have been victimized as it is to investigate and address the perpetrators of these actions. We have heard directly from our students that apologies and restorative action are most critical to move forward positively. Minnesota State High School League will continue to both lead and support our member schools in ensuring safe and inclusive activities for all students. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martins, for your presentation. We've got a couple of minutes for member questions. Representative Erdahl.
thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Martins. I agree that there need to be boundaries involving participants and spectators at high school events. And, it is disappointing that we have reached the point where we have to do more regulation of cheering. You've cited in materials given us bylaws 209, 206, and 409. I'd like to know, are they new, or they've been in effect for a long time, or how long?
Mr. Martins.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, in regard to the bylaws that have been there, those have been in place for quite some time. And so a code of conduct and also the policy that restricts any racial, sexual, religious, or other harassment have been fundamental pillars of the State High School League for quite some time. And sportsmanship and appropriate behavior has always been a part of it. Our schools have always been, as member schools, responsible to be the first to address the behaviors that take place. And that is called out in Bylaw 409 relative to their responsibilities for their teams, for their fans, and for anyone representing them, regardless of location of the event.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. Have you noticed, not just racist comments, but these also address other things. Is this problem becoming more widespread? Has there been a real uptick in this?
Mr. Martins.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, if I might, I would characterize it that certainly the events that are taking place are catching an awful lot of notice. And so the exact number is difficult to track in any way, but without question, these are attracting media notice, social media notice, and so they are very visible and they're concerning. And we need to take action both at the local level but also statewide to address those and make sure that our activities and events are safe and appropriate for everyone.
And Representative Erdahl, we now have four other hands that are raised and not very much time. So if you could wrap up, and for members with hands raised, I'm going to have to hold everyone to one question. Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. Just real quickly, and summing, if you can clarify a little bit, the types of things, without getting, too far afield here. But I'm just want to make sure, regular cheers, lean to the right, lean to the left, come on team, fight, fight, fight. I mean, you're urging them to fight. I hope that isn't going to be considered an offense. I went to a hockey game where the crowd, just not cheerleaders, but the crowd started in, face off, knock their stupid face off. I mean, how do we view these types of things? So, with that, again, I might require a longer discussion some other time, but I'll let it go with that.
Mr. Martins.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I think there's a clear delineation when it comes to cheering against another team as opposed to for your own team. And certainly we want great participation by our student fans, especially, as well as our community fans. But when it comes to addressing individual players or cheering against another team or certainly going toward anything that's inappropriate or would be viewed as offensive, we need to clean that up. And our schools are working really hard at that. And we obviously need to protect our students. And also, we want to make sure that our officials want to continue to be part of our events as well. And so that's an important focus for us also.
All right, thank you.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if you can detail, you said you're going to engage with students
What are your plans to ensure that you're talking to the students actually impacted by this? So students who are part of our BIPOC community, for example, making sure that their voices are rising to the top in these conversations. Can you talk a little bit about that? Thank you.
Mr. Martins.
Madam Chair and Representative Wasilewicz, part of our organization is that we have 16 regions across the state of Minnesota. It's our intent that we would engage representatives of each of those regions to be part of the conversations and make sure that we have individuals that are involved that represent all of our student populations and be specific about requesting that our regions supply students who are interested in, and focused on taking action in this particular area. We want to work together with them. And again, our schools are outstanding at identifying student leaders of all different races, ethnicities, et cetera, as well as activities and sports. And so that's our goal. And we know that that's critical to having a successful conversation. We want to make sure that they are at the table and part of the conversation as well.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. Martins, for your presentation. You know, when I visit schools, I see all these character traits in posters or banners. You know, so I think, you know, when you meet with the staff and with the students, you know, you point to those. In every school, you see those. But I have an unrelated question. During the pandemic, how did the high school league handle the dues and the fees that school districts have to pay to participate in the Minnesota High School League? Did you provide some kind of reduction? Would you explain just briefly what you did during that time?
Mr. Martins.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you for the question. Our league has worked really hard to work with our schools relative to the fees and responsibilities. And so, like so many other organizations, we did encounter cuts with reductions to our costs, both from a staffing perspective as well as our programming. And brought our total budget down by about 40% during the course of the pandemic, as well as taking action to get PPP loans or Paycheck Protection Program loans. And we did have significant fees, as you know, we're funded primarily through tickets, and those were hugely reduced over the course of the first year of the pandemic. That has improved. We were able to reduce fees dramatically in year two here as we've gone forward and continue to hope that we're going to be able to do that as well. But we did engage our schools in creating a new model for how we do finance, by which we are able to take any kind of additional or excess revenues and credit back the membership dues that our schools pay.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question about bylaw 409 as related to spectators. And I guess, you know, the information we were provided says that the school can take action, and then it cites the trespass statute. But I'm wondering if there are any other consequences for, let's say, a team and the spectators come and they're racially taunting players on the opposing team. Of course, they can be removed, but is there any consequences later for that team as far as like having to sit out a game or, you know, if their fans are acting in that way?
Mr. Martins.
Madam Chair, Representative Mueller, in regards to situations around bylaw 409 where we have spectators that are behaving inappropriately, as you mentioned, the trespass notice is out there. When it comes to what I would call non-student individuals, that's probably the strongest, although there could be additional legal actions that could be taken if they're excessive. When it comes to our students, there's a great deal of other opportunities to address those with consequences, and those can include suspensions to attend. This is a school activity and event, so any of our school behavioral rules would apply. And oftentimes, with my experience as a principal for a number of years, oftentimes had to address student penalties for their behavior at any event. And certainly those are things that can be used. And it's about teaching, as we said at the outset, but if or when individuals choose not to follow those rules, we need to take decisive action and apply the appropriate consequences.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the conversation. Mr. Martins, my question is about engagement, you know, with our student population. I have a high schooler who's playing basketball. I'm glad Representative Erickson brought up the fees. It's $185 just for my son to play basketball. And the email that comes across feels very forceful that there's like not a whole lot of other options For us, so that would be a major barrier. $185 is a lot for a lot of our families. My question is more regarding the racism when it comes to the younger programs. I can tell you from experience that's where it started with us. So I know that you're engaging like the high school teams, but a lot of our high school coaches oversee the youth programs, and that's where a lot of this starts and the separation from the sports starts. So when you engage in community, can you talk to me a little bit about how you're going to engage in that younger level to make sure that they continue to stay a part, an active part of the sport?
Mr. Martins.
Madam Chair, Representative Keeler, appreciate the question. And without question, it does start at the younger ages. And so appropriate instruction, we're glad to have the elementary school principals association along with us in making sure that this same message is shared out. The State High School League is a high school entity, yet we know that our coaches have direct impact into lower level programs. And so the tools and the expectations that are provided at the high school level need to be brought forward down into lower levels as well, and to any of those individuals within the school settings that are addressing those behaviors, and to make sure that they understand those same expectations exist and are then brought forward with those students. And if they're not, we need to again teach and appropriately consequence if in fact those actions take place.
Thank you, Mr. Martins, for coming before the committee today and for your presentation and testimony as well. I assume that many will be in contact with you in the coming weeks and months. Thank you for joining us today. Up next on the agenda, we have House File 2246, Representative Hewitt Bill. I move House File 2246 be laid over for possible inclusion in a committee omnibus bill. We will lay this bill over today at 1:40 p.m. Representative Hewitt, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for hearing HF 2246, a bill regarding the size of the Minnesota State High School League Board of Directors. The High School League is a unique entity. It is a private nonprofit corporation with legislative oversight. While it functions as a typical nonprofit, it is also subject to the open meeting laws, the Data Practices Act, audits by the state auditor, annual state reports, and other statutory directives in Minnesota Statute 128C. The League is generally responsible for the control of extracurricular activities. It is important to note that the League is made up of member schools, public and private, rather than school districts. Over 500 public and private schools belong to the League. The league registers over 800 certified officials, which I am one of them, and provides annual training for thousands of coaches. The league has hundreds of individuals who work regionally at state tournaments, many of which preparing for this week's hockey tournament. Most importantly, the league has over 100,000 student participants involved in a wide range of athletic, adaptive athletic, in fine arts and other activities. The current board consists of 22 members, 4 parent members appointed by the governor, 2 members appointed by the Minnesota School Board Association, 2 members appointed by the Secondary Principal Association, 2 members appointed by the superintendents, 4 members representing activities, 8 members elected by the representatives of state within the regions 4A and 4AA. The governor's appointees must be a parent and must include a person of color. The current membership includes 10 women and 1 person of color. The league has strongly encouraged the governor and other appointing authorities to place individuals of color on the board. This gets to Representative Erickson's question. During the pandemic, the league found itself in the middle of a significant financial crisis. As a result of the loss of ticket revenue, superintendents expressed a strong interest in working with the league along the financial term issue. The league's members' schools voted overwhelmingly to amend the Constitution and had 2 members appointed to the State Superintendents Association. This is the reason the legislative change is being sought. This possibly will also give us another opportunity to put more people of color on the board. As you heard, only 5%, right, less than 5% are people of color on this board. I stand for questions, Madam Chair, and I believe Roger Arneson is also here for questions too.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. First up, for testifiers, we have Mr. Roger Arneson. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Roger Arneson. I represent the Minnesota State High School League, their legislative work, and Executive Director Martins is still on the call as well, too, at the end, if there might be a question that a member might have for him. I want to add a couple pieces to Representative Hewitt. We want to thank him for bringing this bill forward. It's a rather technical bill relative to the size of the High School League's board, and it also corrects one reference in the statute that's not correct. The statute talks about members being selected pursuant to the bylaws, and they're actually selected by the Constitution. The language fixes that error in the bill. One of the things I think is important to point out, and you can see this is very clear from Representative Hewitt's testimony, is that the league's board is largely appointed. The league itself doesn't select these members. The member schools select the eight members by election for the regions, and then the rest of the positions on the board, with the exception of the girls and boys sports and the activities, all of those are done by outside appointing authorities. And it is important to know that the league has worked really hard to encourage those outside appointing authorities to put people of color on the board. And frankly, board members have worked hard at that as well, of encouraging people to apply. We will have five openings in June. It is the nature of the board that we have 4 to 5 members rotate off in every year. They're 4-year cycles for the majority of these appointments, including the 4 gubernatorial appointments. So the governor will be appointing another person in June of this year. Our year is a little bit different, where the High School League starts on August 1st for our annual year. And so appointments that come to the High School League start on August 1st rather than January 1st, as is set forth in the statutory appointment piece. I think it's also of note for the committee, these are not appointments that can get confirmed by the Senate. So the governor has the unilateral authority to appoint the individual annually to the board. And by the way, we would say, regardless of who the governor is at any individual time, we would strongly encourage everyone to help recruit people to come in and be on our board. Madam Chair, to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we'll move on to public testimony. We have one individual signed up, Aidil Abdul. Please introduce yourself for the record, Ms. Abdul, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Aidil Abdul. Many thanks for the opportunity to testify today. I am a Somali autism mom, an advocate who would like to retire fairly soon. I want to tell you today, I've heard about the first person who gave us his information about the Minnesota High School League. And my son, as you know, was suspended in high school. And, I'm just really tired. I'm sick and tired of always being told that children who look like me are either failing in school, they're being suspended, they're being insulted, they're being hurt. These things cause trauma. I am traumatized. The children who were insulted in the sports arena are traumatized. And these traumatized, they last a really long time. They don't just go away just because you even go to therapy. They don't go away. And these are hurtful things. And I want the legislators to take that into consideration. I want you to think about every time one of our children is hurt, whether they're insulted, whether they're kicked out of school, whether there's something happens to them in the school district. I want you to take that into consideration. What does it mean for them? How does it affect them in the long term? How does it affect their mental health, their emotional health, their physical health, their financial health? And I want you legislators to stand up for us. These school districts can't just keep coming back and saying, oh, please, 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 we'll do better next time. We have to do something. You have to do something. Cut off their funding. Make sure maybe some of the money they get should go to training, culturally relevant, how to be a nice human being, Maybe that the money should go there. There's got to be better consequences than just them coming to us and saying, we're sorry, we'll do better next time. I wrote a lot, and I was going to read that, but you have it in your packets. In a nutshell, Madam Chair, I respect you more than I can ever say, and I respect all of the legislators here. Your work is really hard. I don't envy your job, but you have got to hold school districts accountable financially. That's the only way they're going to change. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Abdul. Moving on to member questions, I see Representative Erickson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if the parent is still listening, you made some really great statements. And I just want you to know that we have so many laws on the books that if everyone followed these laws, we would not have these issues. But your statement about finances is something, you know, that's really, I think, important for all of us to consider. But my question, Madam Chair, is for Mr. Arntzen.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Arntzen, what is the quorum for a governing board when they meet? What's the quorum?
Mr. Arntzen.
For the league, I assume it'd be a majority.
Representative Erickson.
Yeah.
So do usually you have attendance by 20 or nearly? I mean, you must have to have a quorum to have a meeting. I would imagine that's a part of your protocol. But do you usually all 20 members attend? Because I have attended your meetings, and I find even having 20 members present at that huge conference table is really, really huge. I mean, how does everybody get a word in?
Mr. Arntzen.
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, we have had a lot of discussion consistent with what your question talks about. And, you know, we are at the point of when can you be effective? You know, this is about as large as this board should be. I think that there would be a general agreement on that. If you get a lot larger, the impact has the power gets concentrated in a much smaller number of people. And so that's, I think it's really, and let me say, Executive Director Martins, you know, is keenly interested in keeping this exactly the size where it is now. So you're right. And we do have very good attendance, but yeah, you're right. It's a question of how well the board functions at what size.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Arntzen, are you able to provide us with a financial statement of the league from 2019 through 2021 so we can verify the statements that Mr. Martins made and know, you know, where the league is financially?
Mr. Arntzen.
Madam Chair, Representative, absolutely. Yeah, we have that. And as you know, we're audited by the state auditor.
Yes, yes.
And we have very detailed records on all of those numbers. So we'd be happy to provide them. And
thank
to all
you very
members
much.
Of the committee as well. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions for Mr. Arntzen. First, I'm wondering, I don't know a lot about this board. Are there restrictions on who can be appointed by these appointing agencies? So do they have to be administrator or coach? Like, what are the sorts of people who can be appointed, if you know that?
Mr. Arntzen.
Madam Chair, Representative Wasilek, the specific statutory language on the governor's appointees say that those must be parents and that at least one of those four appointees has to be a person of color. And the language is, this language kind of floats around in different iterations in other places. You can see it there in the bill. Then the groups themselves, for example, the Superintendents Association appoints two superintendents, the secondary principals appoints two secondaries. Internally, those organizations, when they have two appointments, have balanced them so that one comes from small schools. And in the league, we have a cutoff. You hear the number very often of single A schools and double A schools. And that number, I think, we're talking about high schools, 9 through 12. And so the single A schools are the smaller schools, the double A bigger. Those organizations flop those appointments between those two sides, the principals and the superintendents. Then we have boys and girls sports are both represented. They have their own reps that come in, and then the activities directors. So they're people that come from those various activities. Then we have the eight that are elected, and the state is divided into administrative regions. Those regions all have representatives into them, and they elect eight people and send those to the board. So ends up we have a lot of geographic distribution. We don't have as many people of color on the board as we would like.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess you said you're encouraging these entities to appoint or elect people of color. I guess I would be interested to know what that actually means, one, and then two, what percentage of applicants you've gotten, or these applicants for these positions, however the process works, have been people of color, and then what follow-up is done with perhaps people of color in these positions to find out why they may not be applying. I guess I'm interested in knowing. That's a lot of questions all in one, but if you can address some of that.
Madam Chair and Representative Wasilek, I think that's a really important question, and for you guys as policymakers to think about how the league works. We don't review the apps. You know, we don't know who's applied to the governor. But what we do is individually go in and say to someone, would you apply? You know, put your name in and then hope that works through that process. And we do the same thing with the Superintendents Association. You know, we don't want to talk about individual people, but we do go out and say, please put an application in. I mean, I don't know how else to answer that. And internally, you know, they have some criteria. I know that, for example, right now, I think there are 13 applicants with the Secondary Principals Association for a position that that one of their four-year terms comes up in June. And their board looks at the 13 people. But that's outside of the high school league.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would just say that hope doesn't solve disparities that we see on the board. It's not a solution to this problem. I actually don't think expanding the board is a solution. I think that these entities should just be electing and appointing people of color, and whatever that encouragement looks like. I don't think the encouragement needs to be on people who are applying. I think the encouragement needs to be for these entities to actually walk the talk and actually appoint and elect people of color. So thank you for the opportunity to ask some questions.
Madam Chair, can I say one thing on that? I think maybe a letter from the committee and Madam Chair from you to the entities would be helpful.
With that, we are going to give the last word on this bill to Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members, for a robust discussion on this subject as you consider your omnibus bill and going forward. So with that, I'd like to leave you, and again, thank you very much for hearing the bill today.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. I lay House File 2246 over for possible inclusion in a committee omnibus bill. Up next, we have House File 2726, a Representative Edelson bill. Representative Edelson, would you like to move House File 2726 to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move that. And then I also have the A2 amendment I'd like to move.
So you are moving your A2 amendment as well to get it into the preferred form. Members, please unmute yourself to vote on adoption of the A2 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We will have a time certain vote on this bill at 2 o'clock p.m. Representative Edelson, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My 9-year-old will appreciate that because he's texting me to come and pick him up, which don't ever get your child an Apple Watch when they're 9. So House File 2726, let me just explain to you what this bill is. currently right now we have in statute that there are certain specific hours of instruction. And what that really translates into is for every class, essentially high school students, and the amendment, by the way, makes this only about high school students. So essentially what this does is every student has to go when they're going into each different period, has to check in, and we're checking attendance. And so just kind of giving you what that looks like. So right now, this bill would provide more flexibility for districts to meet the needs of their learners. Time is one of our most important resources in education. Our current definition of an instructional hours or seat time can be a barrier to considering new or innovative teaching and learning models for students and for teachers. Today's current definition has the sole focus really on time. And it's maybe a little bit much for really looking at the innovation that we need. We all know that there's a workforce shortage. I think our high schools or students are a great asset as we look at how they can be helpful, not only for their own learning and preparedness for the workforce, but also to help our local businesses, nonprofits. It provides for service learning. It provides for blended learning, which somebody might say, what is blended learning? And let me help you out. So what that essentially is traditional classroom learning mixed with e-learning as well. The other definitions that we put in there, project-based learning, like say, for instance, that would be maybe a licensed teacher would partner and have a student maybe partner and have them do something like a website for a nonprofit that is looking to start up to do a good cause. So it's really looking at what is this idea of personalized learning, what is the student really interested in and how can we help them? That's not post-secondary, that's not PSEO. How can we help them be innovative in that classroom that's going to really meet their needs? Kids have they've had a lot of autonomy over the last 2 years. They want some of that still. So this really does go to that. I know Education Minnesota's here. We didn't have time to do an amendment to make sure that it would fall in line to have this would be supervised by a licensed teacher. I just want to make that clear. And we will do that amendment in Education Finance. So Madam Chair, I would like to go now to my testifiers, which I'm hoping we could start with Mr. John Selwood.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Each of the testifiers, the author's testifiers, will have 2 minutes to testify. Sydney Speck will keep time in the chat and will let you know when you have 30 seconds left and also when you reach time. Up first, we have Mr. John Selwood. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you and share my personal experiences. My name is Johnny Selwood, and I'm currently finishing up my senior year at Montemita High School, and I support the proposed revisions of HF 2627 since they would directly impact students like myself. Beginning in middle school, I actively participated in my school's theater program on the technical side of things, and as my passion and my curiosity developed, I sought more experience and eventually joined the music and events broadcasting crew. Since the live events that this crew covered were usually in the evening and the crew was fully student run, this class regularly involved out of school work, but it also provided hands-on experience with skills like cooperation, leadership, problem solving, decision making, communication, and a variety of technological proficiency. However, in order to be a member of this crew, I had to attend a class period every day dedicated to preparing for the events, regardless of whether or not there was one. And while having an empty period during the school day would allow for some convenient downtime or preparation for these events, the attendance was mandatory for this class in order to actually receive the credit, even though nearly all of the work was being done outside of the class. Work hours outside of school would be as much as 10 to 15 hours during busy sports seasons, but nearly zero during other times of the year. These proposed revisions would allow for flexibility as education occurs for this type of program, while also freeing up an additional class period for other studies. Especially now that I no longer have the opportunity to explore more passions in high school due to my upcoming graduation, I wish that I would have had the ability to do so. And I am now open to any questions that you may have. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Dr. Lucy Payne. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to speak today in support of House File 2726. I'm Dr. Lucy Payne. I serve on the Montemita High School Board. I'm testifying today on behalf of MSBA, AMSD, and MASA. The language in front of you today would allow high schools to have needed flexibility to meet the needs of their learners by removing barriers. Early in the pandemic, we talked about going back to better, and this is one way that we can do that. The current definition of instruction hours has created an education system around schedules, attendance, and funding, which puts time as the focus rather than student engagement, student learning. The rigidity of the system doesn't allow our teachers to do what is best for student learning and growth, because we all know that students learn differently from one another and often at different paces. In our district, the school board has given direction to rethink and reimagine education with students at the center. Our strategic plan, created by community members, teachers, and students, has identified our secondary schedule as a barrier to student learning. Our current classic six-period day schedule limits student choice, while needed learning interventions replace electives. As we work to improve our schedule, we reviewed the U.S. News highly ranked schools of similar size and found they all had schedules with a great deal of flexibility. More flexibility built into the system, which this bill provides, would allow time for students to get support when they need it and before they fail, and for enrichment to be available to all students, thus meeting the needs of students, not systems. The draft schedule from our strategic plan work also allows for flexibility in the length of class periods, so teachers can extend class when needed for deeper, more engaged learning experiences like science experiments or simulations. I'm excited for the potential impact a new schedule could have on students, teachers, and learning. Without flexibility in this bill language, Miami Dade's proposed schedule won't be possible. This bill does not change academic standards or the accountability system, and it does not require our district to make a change. As an educator myself, I'd like to say on record that I support any proposed language that teaching under this bill be done by qualified teachers, as in 122A.16. Ultimately, we want the statute to be clear that locally elected school boards have the flexibility to do this work without having to ask for a waiver or be penalized. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Mr. Adam Gregory. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak in support of HF 2726. My name is Adam Gregory, and I have taught at Belgrade Butenau Rosa High School, a small rural district of 650 students in West Central Minnesota, for 16 years as a science educator. Many of those around me consider me a successful teacher, or so they tell me at times. I have good student relationships. I put effort into designing meaningful and engaging science lessons and labs. Before the pandemic, I would have considered myself a teacher that was reaching every one of my learners. When COVID forced our school briefly into distance learning, I discovered a side of my students which I had never seen before. My students that often sat at the back of the class, the ones that were quiet, the ones who just nodded their heads if I inquired if they understood things and often carried average grades, all of a sudden came to life when they had one-on-one opportunities to meet with me via Zoom and other platforms. With the help of an iPad and a digital pen, I was able to share my screen, example problems, have students share their own work in real time, and demonstrate their understanding. Students who normally would have been afraid in front of a large group to share their learning found their voice. I found myself in a world where students would prefer to schedule one-on-one Zoom sessions outside of normally scheduled class times to practice many advanced science topics rather than be lost and outvoiced by the more vocal majority of my classes. I was able to build new relationships and view smiles which I had never seen before. In truth, I discovered that while I thought I was teaching the majority, I was in fact failing the minority. We know that the time is now for change. The pandemic amplified the design flaws of our current school systems. Through redesign, we can increase engagement, learner agency, and eliminate persistent inequalities. Learners no longer want or should be just spending time sitting in classes learning about the same thing at the same time at the same pace. Flexibilities like blended learning will allow learners of all abilities to advance at the pace that works for them. It empowers qualified teachers to become a designer and a coach who can give support while keeping students engaged and stimulated and connected in more meaningful ways. Thank you for your support of HF 2726, and I will stay for questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we'll move on to public testimony. We have one individual signed up, Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. Ms. Snyder, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Caitlin Snyder, representing Education Minnesota. We have a couple of concerns with this bill, but as Representative Edelson and Dr. Lucy Payne said in their comments, the majority of our concerns would be addressed by having an explicit reference to 122A16, which requires licensed teachers to be teaching these classes. Particularly with service learning and work-based learning classes, there are safety concerns here, there are labor concerns here. We want to make sure that there's proper instruction to these classes. I would note that it seems to be mostly responding to the requirement to take attendance during these classes, which perhaps there would be a more narrow way to address the concerns with perhaps some smaller language. But when language is added with an explicit reference requiring licensed teachers into these classes, I think we'd feel a lot more comfortable moving forward. So we look forward to those changes. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Moving on to member questions, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is for the author.
Please proceed.
Representative Edelson, I noticed that in your new language, you are noting that districts must provide learning opportunities and services designed to support students to be prepared to succeed and lead by having the knowledge and skills, et cetera. Are you familiar with 122A or 124D in statute?
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I can certainly look it up. There's a lot of statutes, so I wouldn't know 122A right offhand. So if you could, I imagine you can tell me about it, though.
Representative Erickson.
Well, yes, Representative Edelson, because everything that you have listed in your bill is in statute. So whether it's blended learning or digital learning, which is 122A, project-based learning, 124D, work-based learning and service learning, they're in 124D as well, supervised internships, 124D as well. So school districts can do all of this already. And if they want to make their premise, you know, as you have stated, that it must provide learning opportunities and services designed to support the students to be prepared, it's already here. And districts should be taking care of it. Montemita can absolutely be an innovative district or school. We have site-based, we have site-governed. We have so many opportunities in the statute already that, you know, I'm just amazed that we're thinking about it, even though you've made this permissive, may include, that we are not taking a look at all the laws that we've put in place in prior years that districts can take advantage of, schools can take advantage of, teachers can be in charge. There is so much there. So I'm just befuddled by this question that comes when we have testimony about, well, I can't do that, but you can. Just look it up. It's in the statute. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Edelson, I don't know if you would like to respond, or we could call on Tim or Christina to offer clarification.
Well, Madam Chair, it was a may to give an example, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, to give an example of what you could do if you did open up the instructional hours. Really, the focus is 1.9 into 1.121, which actually it is not required, but I'm happy to let Mr. Strom or Ms. Christina jump in here.
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, perhaps Ms. Perro would like to speak first on this question. Otherwise, I'm happy to.
Ms. Perro.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Yes, the statutes do authorize the listed, online learning and such. I'm not sure if there's something else I can add.
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, what Representative Erickson is, the point of the is hours on 1.19, hours of instruction include all hours when a board determines is a student is actively engaged in educational process of the district. So really, that's really the point that we're trying to, the points that she's pointing out in 2.1 to 2.11 are really to us trying to provide examples for what we could do. And I honestly think that they're even being taken out in the Senate version. We were just trying to give examples as we go through committee on this. But I will take Representative Erickson's suggestions and note and also look at 122A.
Representative Erickson.
No, Madam Chair, but my point is that we keep creating more laws or more provisions in the education code that we already have access to. And this is a great list, and I wish that districts would take advantage of this because that gives, as our teacher testified, the flexibility to address all the different learning needs. But they can do this. And I just, as a former policy chair, am really surprised when we bring forth proposals that aren't going to do anything because they can already be done. So that's just my position, and I'm sticking to it. Thank you.
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, actually, you know, I would like to just talk, if we could call on, I believe it's Dr. Lucy Payne, just to respond with what the barrier that the school is seeing might be actually really helpful to really tell Representative Erickson what we're actually seeing in the schools.
Dr. Payne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Edelson, for this opportunity to speak and respond to this. I wish my superintendent were here. It is our spring break, and she is out of town, that she is much better at this part of it than I am because she's doing the on-the-ground work. In the conversations we're having, the issue starts to be in that system I spoke of. It's a system of how the statute is functioning around attendance and accounting for time. The expansion of this language would allow districts to account for learning opportunities in a different way. And that expansion, yes, we can already do the things you've mentioned, but we can't make the change to the schedule because we don't have the flexibility around the attendance pieces to be able to do that. This would clarify for everyone involved exactly what is potentially possible. And what I like about this language is it gives the ability of districts to be innovative. Right now, I can give you the example of what we're struggling with, but I know other districts also want to use personalized learning, highly qualified teachers to make a difference and do things differently, and not the factory-based model in order to educate students. The other piece this ties to very closely is funding. If we can't tie attendance and instructional hour, it starts to impact our funding. And so as we look at this proposed schedule, there are flex times where we want students to go directly to interventions where they need help and support. But we can't do that because attendance taking, therefore funding, won't allow us to. So this would clarify that in statute so we would be able to do that and students could get help when they need it.
Representative Edelson? Okay. Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't understand the issue with attendance because average daily membership is what is used as the basis for our funding, and you have to take attendance if you're going to know that they're there. You know, because after 15 days, they could be disenrolled and have to re-enroll 15 days of consecutive absence. So I don't understand why we would like to do that at the high school level when they leave high school and attend college or go to a job. Attendance is an important factor. So I'm just puzzled, and maybe along the way we can get some answers. Thank you.
Dr. Payne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to respond to that as well, because I agree attendance is important. Attendance is very much needed for academic success. With this, we're not saying we don't take attendance and we don't want to take attendance, but right now we must take attendance at every moment during the day. We have to account for those students. The schedule that our district is proposing does have attendance taken every spot for ninth graders when they adjust to the high school. But what I like about it is it really moves our students from a high school model towards that college model you're speaking to. So as they become more mature and understand the high school and get ready for college, there are flex times built into the day where they go and find the help and support that they need. But we can't take attendance during those times unless they tell us ahead of time where they're going. And therefore, they have to pick their spot a week ahead of time where it might be they need support in the moment. And this is giving us the freedom to have those students have that support in the moment. It allows our clubs and organizations to meet during the school day, so students have access that they don't have if they don't have transportation. It's building flexibility in between class periods, and then which just allows the attendance needs to be looked at in a different way.
Thank you, Dr. Payne. And Mr. Strom, I never came back to you. I don't know if you had more to add after Ms. Pera.
Madam Chair, members, I think Representatives Erickson and Edelson have highlighted some of the issues that you're facing. Dr. Payne speaks to the the questions both of funding in terms of the hours of instruction, but perhaps more so the flexibility in schedule that the student was speaking to earlier, where perhaps in some cases students would want to be able to access more than, for example, in the Montemite case, the 6 hours per day, the 6 courses at a time. And so there's issues related on the funding side as to what essentially a full load would be. But then as Representatives Erickson and Edelson have talked about, there are also structural issues, some of which the statutes address for alternative ways to spend the time outside of the classroom or to measure the time when it's done more in an independent study role than in a seat time role, as it were. And I don't want to distract the committee from the important voices that are speaking up here on this, but as I see it, those are sort of the two issues that are faced with more flexibility in both how the students are counted and what courses they can take at one time.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Edelson, I will give you the last word on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a good bill. I mean, the reality is we want, kids want, and students want, specifically high school students want more flexibility in how they go about their day. Oftentimes kids have flex times, but like even my middle schoolers have flex time, but they have to go to a specific class. They might, if that class isn't open, maybe they want to work on something else. The reality is this gives schools local control. It gives them the ability to know and work with their students on what they want to engage in. High school students are going to be taking over and leading and going to our workforce. We want to make sure that we're empowering them on the flexibility of the time that they have and making use of that. So, Madam Chair, I hope to have your support.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Representative Edelson renews the motion to refer House File 2726 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Hassan votes aye.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes no.
Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe? Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Representative Bennett? Representative Bowe?
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 6 nays.
With a vote of 11 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Up next, the last bill on the agenda today is House File 2742, a Representative Berg bill. Representative Berg, would you like to move House File 2742 be referred to the Committee on Education Finance?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would so move.
Members, we will have a time certain vote on this bill at 2:26 p.m. Representative Berg, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This is a very simple bill. It was brought to me by a constituent of mine, and we soon became kindred spirits over this particular subject. And what Mr. Gregory said in his remarks struck me as being relevant to this bill when he said that in feeling like he was teaching the majority, he failed the minority, and he had the opportunity to sort of correct course on that and find some real joy in that, in a different teaching model than we've typically been used to. And I think about that translating to our kids that aren't traditional learners in the classroom, oftentimes ending up in alternative learning centers or other ways to take their courses. And
that doesn't make them any less deserving of academic success. But sometimes by the time students get into these programs, my own son, I will say my youngest son, by the time we moved him over to the Alternative Learning Center where he was in a classroom of 12 versus 35, he blossomed. But it was too late for him to continue on the trajectory of graduating with his actual class. And so 2 years, 2.5 years into the pandemic, we're recognizing that some of those students are even further behind. So this bill basically says that rather than aging out of the public school system at age 21, our students can now age out at age 22. And it's very simple, but I would like to really turn it over to my testifiers who are going to share some amazing stories. So I'd like Mr. Eric Cameron to go first, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Up first, we have Mr. Eric Cameron. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Eric Cameron. I'm a high school social studies teacher. I'm here to urge your support for House File 2742. When my social studies teacher team was reviewing student data during the pandemic, we noticed something that we felt was being left out and not mentioned in the statewide national discussions, that students who are in their fifth year or beyond of high school were really suffering from a greater decrease in their credit attainment as well as attendance than their on-grade level classmates. Being in an ALC program, this was easy to see as I have fifth and sixth year seniors in the same classroom as their grade level peers. In attempting to reconnect and connect with these students, we learned that the students who were behind grade level were more likely to be picking up extra shifts at work or second jobs in order to support their families. They're more likely to spend their days during the distance learning time period supporting their younger students and or younger siblings in their distance learning and unable to or neglecting their own studies for the benefit of their siblings. And others just saw the pandemic-related shift to distance learning as one more barrier between them and their diploma and lost hope that they were going to be able to graduate before they were kicked out of high school at 21. And so we all know, I think it's common knowledge, the socioeconomic data about people with a high school diploma and those without, and that those who do earn their diploma have far better life outcomes, after high school and beyond. I think this bill would be a real tiny cost to save budget in return for a huge payoff later in helping these students earn their diploma and maximize their future outcomes. Passing this bill, allowing the students one additional year to earn their diploma, it makes financial sense and it's just the right thing to do. Thinking about my school and my classroom, when a student needs a second chance, we don't say no to the second chance. When they need more time, we don't say no to more time. If the student wants to improve, to push beyond their obstacles, to try to meet their goals, we always say yes to that. If they need more time, we give them more time. And they need more hope, we give them more hope as well. And I hope that this committee and this legislature do the same. These students need a second chance. They want to improve, they want to overcome and meet their goals, and they just need a little bit more time and a little bit more hope to do so as a result of the COVID pandemic. So please pass this bill and allow students one more year to meet their goals and start the rest of their lives with their high school diploma. It just makes sense and it's the right thing to do. So thank you all for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Wendy Smith. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi there, I'm Wendy Smith. I'm the director of VOA High School. I would like to thank Chair Richardson and Representative Berg for bringing this much needed bill forward. VOA High School is a state-approved alternative program contracting with Minneapolis Public Schools to serve students facing multiple barriers to success. VOA High School, our highest graduation numbers occur in years 5, 6, 7, and sometimes 8 for students. Our staff and our organization recognize that many of our families live in or on the edge of crisis. Now, if you add in the global pandemic and the ways all families and students have had to sacrifice routines and life-giving aspirations to stay safe, so many more youth have joined the ranks of students on the edge of or in crisis, and the time to respond with aid in any form is now. This bill, which allows students most impacted by allowing for an additional year to become graduation credit ready, will show Minnesota students and families that they are worth a hopeful future. We're now seeing more and more students who have become academically paralyzed by the past 2 years and may not finish at the age 21 bell. critical to create a pathway for educational recovery programs to do what they do best for these students. There's no magic credit bullet. The only magic is time. This bill asks for that time and the opportunity for us to make the right moral choice for students who have dropped off the school grid 6 or more months ago and are now surfacing further behind. Students need time to ramp up to becoming fully engaged again, then time to recover the lost time and learning. What's not regularly talked about with these students is that they are also experiencing a loss of motivation, sometimes crippling anxiety, associated with falling off track. They have self-doubt, worry of compounding failures, and letting go of future dreams because there's no apparent way to get there. Educators and licensed support staff also need the time with these students to make as much impact as possible. With the job market widening and workforce shortage reality, our students who are primarily 18 years or older are prioritizing financial security and choosing to work as many hours as employers are willing to offer. This pandemic closure economically impacted our most at-risk students and their families. Unfortunately, this means students will further stretch their graduation timelines. It is imperative we work with this reality, but more importantly, recognize that these working students are still coming to school. BOA High School, we know the high school diploma is the key to hopeful futures, higher earnings, and personal sustainability. So we continue to push programming boundaries to keep students on the graduation path. We ask for you to please consider this bill, a temporary timeline change in support of Minnesota students, their families, and our credit recovery schools. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Nate Kristen. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Nate Kristen, English teacher here at PYC Arts and Tech in North Minneapolis. We are another contract alternative program working under the Minneapolis umbrella. I think Wendy and Eric have already said it well, but I thought I would share some numbers that we have just to show how many students have fallen off their educational path because of the pandemic. We would traditionally have between 260 and as many as 300 students in the course of a year. That's with some coming and going. We saw it was 269 in the school year that ended in 2020. And that's when the pandemic started and we went into distance learning. When we came back in distance learning in the fall of 2020 through 2021, the spring, we had only 183 students. And so there were 86 students who didn't come to us. And as was said, probably were working jobs or taking care of family members and just did not make any kind of progress. We're back in person now, but we've still only seen about 160 students come in throughout the course of this year. There are just a lot of students out there in the community somewhere who need to come back and reengage, and they're going to need time in order to climb back on track and pursue that diploma. The same goes for attendance rates. The ones who are coming to us, their attendance has dipped. I would say it's less than 50% of what it used to be. We saw 23% during full-on distance learning, and we've climbed back up to 34% now, but that's a lot of students who are not coming in and doing what they need to do to be successful. They need more time in order to get back on track and pursue that high school diploma. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The last individual I have on my list is Bradley Jensen. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brad Jensen. I'm the president of the Minnesota Association for Alternative Programs, MAPS. I'm also the lead coordinator for the Empower Learning Center at Hinckley, Minnesota, an alternative learning program in a public school. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of House Bill 2742. MAP supports extending the eligibility for public school enrollment for students in grades 9 through 12 during the years 2021 and 2022, or 2022 and 2023 years. We know that COVID, as Eric, Wendy, and Nate have already stated, has had a tremendous impact on our students. And it's important that we give them additional time to finish their coursework. Many of our students come to us at the age of 18 or 19 with up to 3 years left to complete in their high school program. And what we have found is in our alternative program, many of them find success that they never were able to find in a traditional high school. What we have found also is that about 10% of our students due to family needs, as expressed before, in our area, in rural area, there are some houses that don't even have cell phone coverage, so they can't even, when we went to distance learning, couldn't even do distance learning, even though we gave them technology, because there was no cell capability to connect the hotspot to. So we've lost approximately 10% of our student body in the last 2 years to situations where we had to go to distance learning. That being said, the extension of one more year would allow these students who have found success in our program but have been limited due to technology or family needs the ability to come back and succeed and earn that high school diploma. I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to testify here today and thank Representative Berg for carrying this bill forward. I would be happy to answer any questions, as I'm sure any of the other three would be at this time.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll move on to member questions. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did teach in addition to my regular classroom, I did teach in the alternative programs for 25 years. So I have had a lot of experience with students who need to have this second chance. And I think that Representative Berg has brought forth a good proposal. I would recommend, however, that there be a report to us sometime after the duration of these years of ninth through 12th enrollment, so we know the extent to which it was effective and that, you know, really did pay off for those students. So, because I'm sure that it could bring much success, but I think that would be relevant. So I hope Representative Berg is listening. But Madam Chair, I have one request that I think is important based on one of the bills we heard today, Representative Edelson's. We need to find out from the department how districts counted instructional hours during the pandemic. And we should have MDE report to us what they learned from districts about how did they count those instructional hours. Because that's important for us to know as we proceed. There's some movement away from that, but we need to know what did happen during the pandemic. So I hope, Madam Chair, that you will request that. I will as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Berg, any comment in relationship to your bill?
Yes, actually, I was listening, Representative Erickson, and thank you, Madam Chair, for calling on me. I agree with you. I think an assessment and a report at the end of the time frame laid out in the bill is a great idea, way to track data so that we can see maybe if we need to tweak it or if it's working well as is. So thank you for that suggestion.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Berg, I just had a couple of questions. They're just more technical in nature, I guess. Do you have an idea how many students would need these extended couple of years? And then secondly, is there a fiscal note with that? I'm not saying that the cost isn't worth it, because I think that it is. But if you could just answer those two questions, I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Scott. I don't know how many students statewide need this extension right now, but we could certainly find that out. I'm sure we can collect some resources between all of the organizations that support this to find that out. And at the moment, there isn't a fiscal note attached to it. So, so I'm actually not quite sure why we're sending it over to Education Finance, other than I think Chair Dabney wanted to hear it. But at this time, I did not include a fiscal note in my bill.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm guessing, I mean, I don't sit on Education Finance anymore. I did for a while, but I'm guessing if they're going to add a couple years of instruction that there'll probably be some fiscal cost. Do you know if a fiscal note has been requested at all, Representative Berg?
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Scott. At this time, I have not requested a fiscal note. We wanted to get the policy piece heard in this committee and then work on it from there. But thank you for pointing that out. We need to make sure that we do that.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Not seeing any other hands, Representative Berg, I will give you the last word on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just think as we've been having this discussion since we reconvened this session, each and every one of us on this committee has just been trying to figure out how we help our students. It's what we've always wanted to do, but since the pandemic, we've had the discussion on how we best support our students from a very holistic process. And so I just hope you all support this bill and give our kids the chance that they need to get back on track and succeed. Thank you.
Representative Berg renews the motion to refer House File 2742 to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes aye.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe?
Bowe votes aye.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes aye.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Madam Chair, there are 18 ayes and one nay.
With a vote of 18 ayes and one nay, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. One point for clarification on House File 2726. Can you please note that Representative Bowe voted no on House File 2726. He was having some technology problems. And with that, there is no further business before the committee. We are adjourned.